welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. As always, it's such a delight to be here in the safety of the studio and with you today. You know, coming to the studio is one of the very few times I even leave my house and my computer and my prayer room and, I must say, my television, especially now that baseball is back on track and I get to watch my son play. That's quite a pleasure. My guest today, Caitlin Kogan-Domner, is one of my very favorite people. Although to me, she's just a puppy. Sorry, Caitlin. I believe she possesses the inklings of a sage. Caitlin is brilliant, thought-provoking, and a boatload of fun. And what else could you ask from a growing and great woman? Although Caitlin was just on the show about 4 months ago on another topic, recently she posted thoughts on Facebook that utterly captured my attention. She wrote about never feeling good enough. Although her successes in business and life are indeed enviable. Check this out. In only a decade after earning her bachelor's degree, Caitlin completed a master's degree, bought a home, grew a $1 million business in less than 3 years, published 3 books, got married, and birthed 3 babies. Yeah, I agree, Caitlin, that's not enough. not bad for a decade's work. And yet, Caitlin is still haunted by that oh so common feeling I just referred to as never being good enough. So today, we will explore how being more will never be good enough when the truth just might be the best things in life cannot be measured, at least by status and accomplishment and money. So with that brief introduction, let's bring on Caitlin Kogan-Domner. Caitlin, buddy, thank you so much for taking time to be with me. And as I hate to say, your time away from your busy life to be on the next chapter with Charlie. I so look forward to our chat.
Yeah, I treasure our times together. So much fun, Charlie.
Well, yeah, so much fun. And we'll see if it's fun for our listeners. It's a total joy for you and I. And they could be looking at it and going, WTF, what was that all about?
What are they going to drop on us this time?
Truly. Now, you know, just a few weeks ago, I discussed the idea of limiting beliefs with entrepreneur and business coach Ashley Stanley. So, but after reading your thought-provoking post, I knew I had to get you back on the show. Tell me about that post. What instigated that post? We're going to get to it more in depth and other things in depth, but what was your driver of that post?
Yeah, so you mentioned limiting beliefs. I really do believe that we have this emotional guidance system that tells us when we're in alignment with truth and when we're not. And I was having a coaching session. I'm actually going through a coaching certification course for life coaching, and as part of that course, we are coached. And during one of those sessions, I ran right up against this limiting belief that I'm not enough, that I've never been enough, and I've been constantly striving for all of my life. I was going to say my adult life, but even in high school, it was the AP classes, it was the leading youth groups, it was always had to do more and better. And so there was just this feeling inside of me. And my coach comes from more of a spiritual perspective. And so for her, in her words, she said, well, let's get in touch with your inner wisdom and hear what it has to say. And as a Christian, I kind of view it a little bit differently. But as I just felt into that space and recognizing that I'm not enough can't be true because it feels icky, right? So that emotional guidance system is telling me, well, this doesn't feel good. Therefore, I know it's not truth, right? Because God is truth and the source of goodness, truth, and beauty, right? So when I'm in alignment with my truth, it feels different. It feels good. It feels like love and joy and peace. And this belief that I'm not enough, it's never enough, I always have to keep striving and working harder, that doesn't feel good. That fills me with anxiety and frustration and depression. And depression has been something I've wrestled with a lot over my life.
Really? I was not aware of that, Caitlin.
Yeah, I tried to commit suicide a couple times before college, and then only once since then. So it's definitely improved as I've been able to manipulate my external surroundings a little bit better. But I grew up in a kind of an emotionally abusive home with my mom, and just it. There was a lot that I had to deal with. But yeah, my proclivity on the manic depressive scale is more to veer into depression and melancholy when I'm not feeling that upper of adrenaline. And for those of you who don't know, right, the biological chemistry, like stress activates hormones. So if you don't want to feel certain emotions, what a really effective way is just to keep yourself very busy and give yourself kind of a self-produced high in terms of staying in that heightened awareness active state. And just realize that it also leads to, you know, adrenal fatigue and all sorts of
ergo
burnout.
The manic of the manic depression.
Right, exactly.
Do you know what that's called psychologically, what you just described? Because I am bipolar as well, and that is called bipolar 2. Are you familiar with bipolar 1 and bipolar 2?
I'm not, no.
Bipolar 2 is a focus on the stronger of the two is depression, and bipolar 1, the stronger of the two, is manic. And so the depressives don't frequently experience a manic, although it is there, and the manic don't experience the depressive as much as they do the manic, and that is not at all uncommon. I have to keep on to this. I don't want to move away from this because I think this is too important. And what do you think was instrumental in you wanting to throw in the towel and take your life? What was moving you toward that? Do you have any idea what you felt like you were missing?
Yeah, the most dramatic instance that I remember was the day before my 16th birthday. And in terms of what led to it, I think it was probably a combination of factors. One was feeling trapped, that I wasn't going to be able to escape this cycle of powerlessness that I felt, not feeling like I mattered, that nobody would even miss me if I was gone. It's hard because I think my brain has sort of blacked out certain traumatic memories throughout my history. It's hard for me to recall difficult periods of my life. But I do remember going to the cabinet, consuming all of the medication I could find in there, and then holding a knife to my wrist, sort of miraculously passing out and waking up without any drug side effects. And it really felt like something broke. Like there was definitely a divine intervention where that impulse to kill myself was never, ever as strong after that incident. And I really feel like God just had a direct intervention and said, like, okay, this is enough, right? It's there is hope. There is a future. I do have plans for you. Now I actually believe that our past selves and our future selves probably have ways to communicate. So I also often wonder if maybe my future self was able to intervene and kind of give me hope and say, like, hey, sweetie, it gets better, right? Like, just hold on a little bit longer.
And how important is hope? My goodness, you know, that is without, you know, it's downplayed, I think, a lot today, too much. But hope, you know, we must have hope. I mean, we cling to hope. If we have no hope, than it is, where it's just the downward spiral. Where do we go from there?
I think that that's very common right now, especially. I heard that suicide hotlines are up like 600% since quarantine hit.
600%?
It's been kind of crazy just realizing how hopeless and powerless and trapped people have been feeling lately.
Well, you know, doesn't that betray a lack of support, encouragement, positive feedback? You're okay. You're doing okay. Rather than you're not okay. Get better. Until you get better, you're not good enough. And I don't care to blame parents, because parents typically do that because they don't have it. You know, they're just mimicking what they feel on the inside. And yet, it is so damaging to so many children and to so many adults. I mean, you know, it just you know, it doesn't stop just with adolescence or young adulthood. It goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my strongly held beliefs is each of us is doing the best we can with what we know and with where we're at. And it really allows you to provide so much grace to parents, to people who cut you off on the road, to all kinds of instances where you could interpret their actions from a place of victimhood, or this person is trying to get me, or this person is trying to hurt me, and instead saying, right, my mom, other people's parents, right? We're all doing the best we can with what we know, with where we're at.
I so concur. You know, I put it in much simpler terms, in that I often like to say that, you know, it's so common, it's so trite, Caitlin, that all we are doing is playing the cards we are dealt to the best way that we know how. And mm-hmm. and until we can accept that, we must accept that. We're saying, oh, if only I had, if I had done this, if I had done that. Well, those weren't the cards dealt to you. You did not have the information. You did not have the background. You did not have the history of experience. You were doing the best you can for mm-hmm. psychological and lifestyle survival. It's all about survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've gone even one step further and genuinely believe that everything is always working out for our highest good and the highest good of all involved. And if you can buy into that one belief, it sets you free from so much angst about how things should have been or could have been or would have been. And so if you just trust that, right, my mom being my mom was exactly the mom that I needed to be for me to become the woman that I am, which allows my kids to be the kids that they are, right? So that each thing, each moment of trauma or abuse or terror, whatever it is that we're wrestling with, if even now you can believe, like, this is uncomfortable, right? And I think it's really good to not judge the experience as a negative thing. But if I can accept that this is uncomfortable, but this is serving me, right? I don't understand how yet. And I would say, if you don't see how it's serving you, you just haven't lived it out long enough, right? The story will always come full circle. It just may take you some time. But if you just trust that in the moment, there will be a purpose, that it will serve you, it really allows you to kind of take the sting out of negative experiences.
You know, Caitlin, one of the things with older age, as me at 70, is that I can see a history of what were negative experiences and disappointments and frustrations and the feeling that I wasn't good enough, the feeling that I wasn't appreciated, the feeling that I wasn't respected. I had several of those, how those were actually, in the long run, were blessings, in that mm-hmm. it impacted the way I believe and the man that I am today. You know, I often talk about my childhood and how my childhood was so impacted me so negatively, until today I see that abandonment and rejection helps me understand what is mm-hmm. going on with people that feel abandoned, rejected, or not part of the crowd, not part of being accepted. And it gives me empathy, it gives mm-hmm. me insight, and it gives me direction to be deeply involved with those, with people who have experienced that.
Yeah, absolutely. You can almost rewrite any history, any personal history with that bias, and rewrite your future as a result.
That's, you know, you bring up, that's why I called you, you have the inklings of a sage, because it is not just about where you are today, it's about where you can be in the future. And mm-hmm. so you can rewrite the unknown future, because you can't predict the future, but you can rewrite the hope for the future, knowing mm-hmm. that, as the proverbs say, the man of mind plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. So, mm-hmm. you know, we can plan our ways, but it is good, not we can. I think it's incumbent mm-hmm. upon us to plan our ways, but mm-hmm. the steps may be altered. But had we not planned our ways, had we not made plans for the future, ideas for the future, hope for the future, there will be no future. It will be exactly the same as it is today.
Yeah, we'll just recreate what we've, our past. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a go ahead. Yeah, I want you to go ahead.
No,
please.
Go for it.
Oh, there's a friend of mine, Vance Caesar, who was going to write a book, and I've always threatened to. He never wrote it, but the title was brilliant, and it was called "The High Value of Low Self-Esteem." and what he said was, low self-esteem is an emotional construct. That mm-hmm. is, that's where it's coming from. Yet we, extremely successful people, are trying to fill that emotional hole with accomplishments, acquisitions, power, status, and never fills that hole, yet they keep trying, they keep trying. So it equates to tremendous success with being terribly maladapted human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I have found, that this not enough, this low self-esteem, this having to prove myself is very much at the heart of most of our high achievers in our society. There's this very powerful, albeit neurotic, push to do something worthwhile, whether you're proving yourself to a parent, or as I mentioned, it's almost just to myself, right? I've always known that greatness, quote unquote, whatever that means, is inside me. And I have to assume that I have to work my tail off. And that actually came a lot from the Christian upbringing, where Jesus is like, to whom much is given, much is required, right? If you get 10 talents, you're expected to come up with 20 talents, right? And so I always had that very heavy burden, right? That I do believe that God has gifted me in some incredible ways. And instead of rejoicing and saying, okay, great, I'm so excited, what can I do with this? It's more like, okay, I need to do something with this, right? I have a moral obligation to fulfill my potential, which I'm realizing as I'm peeling back the layers and getting back to, no, I am unconditionally loved. And I'm kind of hinting at the solution that I came up with, the whole not enough bit, but that it just allows it to flow through me. I'm actually finding that I'm more productive, more creative, more abundant. Money is flowing to and through me so much more easily. I'm getting more accomplished in less time, in a more peaceful state than I used to when I was trying to work and make things happen. And I tend to think of it as like a masculine energetic, a feminine energetic flow. I don't know that that's always fair to the masculine, but as I step into more what I think of as femininity, which is flow and ease and grace and beauty and pleasure, things do seem to just sort of happen magically. And I haven't done it enough yet to be able to trust that. I still have that instinct that I need to make things happen for myself. So it's still like a muscle that I'm working, like a spiritual gym, to kind of strengthen that faith muscle, that I'm just part of a beautiful symphony and I don't have to worry about conducting. I just get to focus on the piece that I'm supposed to play and really enjoy the experience of making my music.
You know, you're mentioning something about the feminine and I kind of want to go on that track for just a moment. And Mm-hmm. And as we chatted a couple of days ago, you and I both resonate with the power of the belief among mystics that there exists an essence known as the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. And we're very attuned to the corporate feminine that is too frequently just a conversion to the masculine feminine wearing a dress. Mm-hmm. And yet there are feminine ways of leading that are so much more powerful, and not necessarily more powerful than the male-oriented or patriarchal society, but that have to be taken advantage of. And about 2 years ago, my teachers, Taryn Voget and Dina Crowder, both informed me that they sensed the presence of the divine feminine in my life. Mm-hmm. And that has personally impacted me so much. That presence has personally impacted me. And as I said, in a male-dominated and patriarchal society, we seem to lack the inclusion of even the concept of the divine feminine. And I know mm-hmm. you're into the divine feminine, so I would love for you to talk about that rather than me. What do you see is the divine feminine?
Yeah, wow, that's such a beautiful can of worms to open. So the way I view it is, it's kind of almost Taoistic in this, that the masculine and the feminine energies are not specific to male or female. It's more a mode of being. So if you're thinking of yin-yang symbol, mm-hmm. right, there's darkness is to sunlight, right, that water is to fire. There's the masculine and the feminine. They're both necessary and beautiful and should be present in every individual, right? The whole goal is balance. It's just, as you pointed out, that our culture has been imbalanced towards the masculine for probably at least 2,000 years-ish, and at least
like
in the Western civilization.
Not for 2,000 years, like forever, Caitlin.
Yeah, it's been out of balance for quite some time, and so I do think that the pendulum will probably swing a little bit out of balance in the other direction for a little while until we can actually find a place of centeredness. And that's what I'm experiencing on an individual level is, like I said, the way I think of masculine is structure, it's push energy, it's make things happen energy. So, and then feminine is flowing, it's allowing, it's receiving. So if you think of just a masculine, like if in the male and female dynamic, right, it's the male's part to push and to enter and to make happen, and it's the woman's part to receive and to allow to happen. And so if you just kind of see that, the way I think about it is, like, if you're going to think of sports from a masculine and feminine perspective, right, rock climbing is a very masculine energy, right? It's me versus the rock, and I will either conquer and get to the top or I will fall to my death trying, right? There's lots of structure, it's very hard. Whereas surfing, every surfer will tell you it is not them making this happen. Their job is to wait and to watch. And then when the wave comes, to ride the power of the ocean, and you just get to enjoy the sensation of being carried along. And so
that's a beautiful image. And that sort of is the feminine image, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I'm trying to now practice in my daily life. And the post that you found was, that was how I solved the not enoughness problem, was as I was coming to God and saying, like, I don't feel like I'm enough, right? My spiritual mind, my coach was telling me, you're always enough. It's always enough. And I was like, even that isn't resonating the truth. So when I tapped in, what I heard from God was he just kind of chuckled, right? God and I have sometimes a snarky communication signal, but, he just sort of laughed and he's like, oh, sweetie, right? I never asked you to be enough. I said that I would be enough. I just needed you to be open and allow me to flow through you and be the vessel. And so when you talk about the divine feminine, that's the piece that I want to start emulating, is just allowing myself to be the vessel and for it to flow through me. And I almost feel like the divine feminine is like our archetype. It's more like the Christ, right? The Christ is the feminine and the Father is the masculine, because it's coming through the Christ, and it happened to the Christ and through the Christ. So that's sort of how I view my experience of now, what I'm trying to experience in my work, in my art, even in my parenting, right? It's just, how can I allow myself to be open, to watch and to wait and to ride the wave of his power when it flows through me? So I guess from that perspective, we're almost all, and can I just go on a tangent real quick?
No, you didn't go on a tangent. Please do. I love tangents.
I actually feel like that's probably why in scripture they chose a masculine pronoun for God. It's not that God was masculine or feminine in the ways that we think of that. It's simply that as we relate to the divine, we are the collective feminine relating to divine as the masculine, because he is the worker and we are the receivers. He is the actor and we are the vessels. And so I actually don't think it's that God is male. I think that God is all that God is, and we wouldn't have, like, male and female couldn't be made in his image if he was just one, right?
Right.
But I think we chose the masculine verb because it was supposed to communicate that idea that we are, and it's not even subservient. It's just, we are the recipients. And I think that that can be a really beautiful, like the act of surrender is absolutely fantastic when it's chosen, not required. And I do believe that God gives us an invitation, and he says, yeah, absolutely, you could do this on your own, but why would you want to? That sounds exhausting, and we play that out every single day.
It sounds exhausting, and it sounds a route to frustration and maybe success in the eyes of mankind, but but not success in the eyes of God and the eyes of connection with the divine. That is not, that is what we call in the mystical tradition, that's what we call the false self, the ego that is like Little House of Horrors. It's like it's like the plant. It's saying, the ego is saying, feed me, Seymour, feed me. Feed me with more power. Feed me with more accolades. Feed me with more acquisition. And it gets it, and all it does is remain hungry. It's never satiated. It is never satiated. Now there are two things from what you said that I want to I want to kind of go on from, and I want to talk about Christ as and God as the Father as the male, and Christ and his people are the female, and then I also want to talk about vessel, but But I think what you just described there, Caitlin, is you just described the church.
Yeah.
The church is the bride. The church is not the groom. The church is described in Scripture. Now, you know, God forbid, but the church is described in the feminine. If she's the bride, she's the feminine. And God is the masculine of this. And the more we can portray that kind of obedience, acceptance, generosity. You know, the scriptures are filled with God. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loves the church. I think you really caught on to something really, really powerful there. But
don't forget pleasure, because I'm also going to throw out there that the feminine has some inherent pleasure and play sides that the masculine doesn't always seem to. And I did a whole article on the defense of pleasure for a Christian community, because, you know, the church has not historically been a big fan of pleasure. Some of the early church fathers were like, procreate only for the sake of making children, but by all golly, please don't have fun while you're doing it.
Yeah, and that's kind of, didn't you write a book against that?
I did, yeah.
Tell me the name of the book, just so the audience can know how radical it is.
It's called called sex every day. Yes, my husband and I have been enjoying pleasure for the last 11 years of our marriage. And we're like, you know, we've got a system. Everybody can enjoy this. But there was some, not really vocal, but we got one very nasty Amazon review and it was from a conservative Christian. And so I wrote this article in defense of pleasure. And basically, I was arguing that, right, the clitoris should prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is for pleasure's sake, right? You could argue that for men, pleasure is secondary towards the procreative act, but God absolutely did not have to give women clitorises, but he did. And it's because, I argue, that he values and appreciates pleasure for its own sake. And that, I think, tends to get lost a lot. And so we will talk about subservience and surrender and obedience, but also joy and pleasure and play. And I think that's been the part of experiencing God that was, it's been novel for me, that this can be fun. It's not like, okay, God, thy will be done. I had this horrible fear that God was going to send me to Africa to be a missionary. And clearly I wanted to be a wealthy entrepreneurist, right? So it's one of those things where I was like so worried that God's will was going to be antithetical to my will. And now I'm realizing God says delight yourself in me and I will give you the desires of your heart, that he really is, he's wired you to have certain desires and loves and passions. And they might get a little misdirected at times, but he is genuinely interested in us being happy. It's just when we assume that anything outside of our communion with him that will make us happy that we get a little off center. But there's he created the whole world to be this pleasurable sandbox that we get to play in and build sandcastles together. And it's, I think it's pretty obvious that God values.
I think it's the, if I can use a fancy theological and linguistic term called epistemology, I think it's how do you know what you know? And we have looked at it at such a male construct, and we've looked at it as such a literal concept construct that we've not delved into the union with Christ, the pleasure of the pleasure of prayer and of unity and the use of all the difficulties that we have and how those bring us closer to God. They are, as I'm reading now and I'm reading these people, they're just showing me what is called metanoia. Metanoia in the Bible is translated as repent, which is a bad Latin translation, which we think repent is confession of sin and, kind of going before God in humility.
Possibly and self-flagellation and goat.
Exactly. And the word metanoia simply means change your mind. You need to change your mind about the way you are viewing me. You are not viewing me well. Change your mind. I have come to save the world. I have come to bring
that you may have life and have it more abundantly.
Good quote. I'll take that one rather than one I was going to use. I like that. I have several more things to ask you, but I think now is time that we might take a brief break, and then we will come back and we will really get into this even more.
I love it.
Hi there, you're listening to Charlie Hedges on The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm with my very special guest, Caitlin Kogan-Domner, and we are talking about a number of things under the heading of not being enough, and the idea is when being more is not enough, and that we don't want to be more, that we want to be But the doing gets in the way. And Caitlin, I want to throw a quote at you that I read with Thomas Merton and James Finley, who are indeed deep mystics. And I should have been queuing it up during our time. I didn't queue it up. And here we go. We live in a culture. It's difficult, you know, when you're feeling not that you're not enough. We live in a culture that so highly values accomplishments and acquisitions instead of a deeper sense of personness and connection. And that is connection with others, and even more importantly, connection with the divine. Mm-hmm. And what Merton and Finley talk about is being overdoing, and that is critical, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now let me finish this one part, because this is my main point. The fancy Christian mystical terms for this is ontology over morality. And so that simply means, in the terms of the Christian devotees, who you are absolutely must precede what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Let me repeat, because I think that's the essence of almost everything we're talking about. Who you are absolutely must precede what you do. How does that strike you?
Oh, 100%. I found that to be true across the board. And if you read any sort of even high performance coaches who are trying to help you become more successful and to accomplish more, even they will tell you that it has to be a shift in your personhood, how you think of yourself, your identity, your mind.
If I may interrupt, I have to say, you know, one of the productivity gurus of the United States today, Tim Ferriss, and mm-hmm. you know, many people are familiar with Tim Ferriss, who is a productivity measurement-oriented guy. He's dropping all of that in lieu of peace, solitude, serenity, and saying the things that are important in life, is what we stated earlier, cannot be measured. And as long as you're on a measurement scale, you are really not, you're getting better, but you're not achieving full life. You're not mm-hmm. achieving it the way that you would, the way that it could be achieved.
And I feel like most of us who have checked off the boxes, for me it was building a business, getting money, house, kids, books, those things that I listed on my bio, right? Those check boxes, I got to this place where I was like, dang it, I've checked all of the boxes and I'm still not happy. And as long as there was one more box to be checked, one more accomplishment that I had to achieve, then I could tell myself, it's fine. I'll be happy after that, right? But it's anybody who's ever climbed a mountain realizes there's always a higher mountain that you need to climb on the other side. So it was just this kind of treadmill of success that when I finally did get to the top of my mountain and I looked around and going like, sheesh, I worked really hard, but I still am not happy. And I think that's where Tim Ferriss is. He's like, I've got the money, I've got the fame, I've got the body, I've accomplished all of this stuff, and it's still not enough. And I think it's when you can hit that, I think it's why we have a lot of midlife crises historically, is you keep thinking that if I just get to the top of the ladder, I'll be fine. And we can suppress all of this dissatisfaction, frustration, this ennui that is building up inside of us because we haven't reached X or Y or Z. But then for those of us who do accomplish X and Y and Z and it's still not enough, this is when we suddenly have to come face to face with a reality that it probably never was. We just didn't get to that point. It's like we've climbed Maslow's hierarchy and now we're ready for enlightenment.
and we've in the terms that I'm using, and we've measured our way up. When you can't measure your way up. Now, something, you had an experience last week that I think, you know, sort of cemented a lot of this, and you went on vacation. Can you tell me the story of your vacation and creativity and how that even cemented even stronger your feelings about who you are over what you do and the idea of vessel and the idea of flow. I'm interested in the learnings, but I'm also interested in the story of how you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one, we decided to book a week's vacation in Tahoe simply because if I was going to stay one more week in my house, I was going to just do something terribly dramatic, like chop all my hair off or like destroy a wall with a sledgehammer. Like I was getting stir crazy. And so we were going to take off, but I had just onboarded 5 new clients and our business is pretty intensive and I haven't gotten it to the place where it can run itself yet, although that is the goal. And I really was in charge of getting these 5 projects off the ground. And I was like, if I take a week off, everything could hit the fan. And through my coaching work, like just being reminded, well, what's actually true? Well, what's actually true is that I'm not really in control of anything. Control is an illusion. So what if I was able to make a contract with God and let him be in control for a little while, just 1 week, it's not much, just pry my fingers off the steering wheel for a little bit of time. And so I did. I sat down and I wrote out this contract. I, Caitlin Kogan-Domner, do hereby relinquish all control, and instead I anoint God himself, God Almighty, as my business manager and finance director. And then I listed, this was unexpected, but I just went through, I Googled promises of the Bible, and then I made each one personal, right? So he will protect me. He will enlarge my territory. He will uphold me with his righteous right hand. He will, right? And I just made this list of like personal promises that God has made. And I think there was like 40 or 50 of them. It just kept on.
Yeah, there was a long list.
Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to the bottom end of it, it was like, well, crap. And I wrote, I was like, paragraph, I am free to resume control as soon as I think I can do this better. Right? But that's what I realized is like, why the heck would I ever take back up the reins of control? Like, that's a terrible plan. So signed the contract, and immediately felt just like, this relief. Like, now if anything goes wrong, I've got somebody I can blame, right? There is somebody who is on the hook now. And we went on vacation and nothing fell through the cracks and everybody was taken care of. And while I was there, I got really clear on exactly what I need to do to exit this business and launch our lifestyle brand. So we're planning on taking the kiddos and traveling the world. And we realized we don't have to wait until next summer. We can start in January because schools won't be open anyway. And we decided we want to write like fictional books about the kids on this adventure and create educational experiences that other families can participate in. It was just this beautiful flooding of creativity that came once I was able to relinquish control and step into a place of beauty and peace and relaxation and say, okay, all right, this is the life that I want to create. This is where I feel alive and where I feel refreshed and where I'm present with my kids. And I'm the kind of mom that I want to be. And I'm the artist that I want to be. And, this is what I want to create. And so I was able to come back from vacation with a clear vision of how I could create all the things that I want to create, but keeping in mind that I don't, and then that was only Saturday that we got home, but everything has flowed, right? We're ready to hire a sales team manager, and we just got our software onboarded, and I have a call with somebody to talk about what it would look like to write these fictional books for kids, and it just feels like knocking down a domino. Everything else has felt really easy. And I, like I said, I haven't done this long enough to really have that reflex of trust that it will keep being this easy, but it feels like God has given me this really beautiful little honeymoon season where he's like, hey, this is how easy it could be, right? I just want you to have a taste that you can be creative and be productive without having that stress and that pressure and that hustle sensation that you're so addicted to.
And who I am as God in love and in service. And you know, and mm-hmm. I really would like to get to, we talked about muses and genius, and you talked about creativity and art, and that as you're creating, and I experienced this in my art when I would paint, and I would you know, I'm a self-taught painter, and I'm a contemporary painter because I can't draw stick figures, but I do have inspiration, and mm-hmm. how when I was into my painting, whether it be a good painting or not a good painting, but when I was into my painting, partway through the painting, I was no longer painting, Caitlin. I was, mm-hmm. it was not me. There was something flowing through me that I was just sort of entranced and just writing down or painting down what was told me to paint down. There was a flow. I was a vessel to mm-hmm. my muse. And I used another example of when I was writing short story, and I'll never forget, as I was writing the conclusion of the short story, my protagonist concluded the short story with an action that I literally sat back and said, "Holy cow, I cannot believe he did that. How in the world?" Mm-hmm. You know, I'm writing it. And I had no idea he was going to do that because I was in a flow. There was a flow that was that was talking to me. So talk to me about flow and vessel, because I just think that sort of draws together everything we've been thinking about, everything we've been talking about, of mm-hmm. the flow of the divine and of yes. and of our muses, and, you know, as the Romans called it, our genius.
Right. And I think that's a good indication that this is not just a Christocentric notion, that this idea that the divine works through us is from the time of the Greeks. They had their muses, and they would invoke them, and then they would begin. Like I said, the Romans had their genius. You had a genius. The genius was the spirit that came upon you. You weren't a genius. And when I look through history, up through the time of the Renaissance, when we still believed that art, creativity, inspiration, these were things that came through you from an external higher source, our artists were seen and they were celebrated. And then we switched and we moved into humanistic rationalism, and suddenly everything had to come from you, and you were a genius and you were the artist and you had to be the source of this creation, but you are a finite and limited creature. This is when our artists start going crazy and becoming impoverished. And I don't think that I don't think it's a coincidence that there was just this sense that being an artist was a gift, but not a burden, right? That this was just, you got to show up, you got to open yourself, you got to allow this creativity and inspiration to flow through you. And when something was made, You almost couldn't take credit for it. you're like, oh, well, that's exciting. That happened. In the same way that a mother doesn't take credit for giving birth, right? She gets to be the vessel for 9 months, and then this thing comes out of her, and she's like, holy crap, that's a miracle. I have no idea how that happened, but I'm so glad I got to birth that. And so as a mom and as an artist, I've always felt like that's a really great analogy for art, because when I was struggling with this identity of saying out loud that I am an artist, right, because I haven't studied art professionally, I haven't gotten paid much for my art, right, all of these weird nomenclatures that I had associated with the idea of an artist. And I was like, well, what if I'm not good enough? What if my book isn't well received? What if it doesn't become a bestseller? What if nobody likes my paintings, right? I was so in the idea that this thing had to serve a purpose, and the image that I got was a mother doesn't get to choose which of her children are successful. Her job is just to birth them and allow them to be their own self.
And when the mother begins to take credit for the success of the child, then it's all upside down, is it not?
Yeah.
Or the father. You know, I can use the same example with my son. I mean, I was fortunate, Caitlin. You know, I was, for the many early years up to like 7 or 8, I probably was able to spend 6 hours a day with my son, because mm-hmm. my job, I did so well on my job, all I had to work was about 25 hours a week, and I could mm-hmm. spend 20 to 25 hours a week with my son, playing baseball, mm-hmm. playing swimming, doing all sorts of things. You know, we played together. As a matter of fact, a funny story is when my son was about 5 years old, and I only had to be out of town like for 5 days a year, I would go to Calvary, Canada. And then, mm-hmm. and so then I would be out of town for that time period. But otherwise, I was in town and I could work while he was in preschool. I would take him to preschool. We would go on a lake. We would swim first. Then I would pick him up. And, you know, and so one time my wife and I asked him, so son, what do dads do? And he says, well, dads take kids to school and dads cook and dads do the laundry. And
that's what my children and think then, dad do too.
And then what do moms do? They work. and you know, but the point is, Caitlin, it was never a sacrifice. It was a flow. It was the gift that God did me. There was nothing that gave me greater pleasure. I could have worked and made twice the money, but that was not important. What was important, and it's only from the grace of the divine, that what was important was my relationship with my son. And fortunately, you know, at 27, almost 28, we have an identical relationship today.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's the point, is you don't get to pick, right? I've got 3 that I birthed and 1 that I inherited when I married my husband. I don't get to choose which one's going to be successful, right? As an artist, your job is just to birth this thing, to bring it into the world and let it live. Seth Godin wrote a great book called What to Do When It's Your Turn and It's Always Your Turn. And he was like, the artist's job is just to ship it, right? Just ship it. And that's, I've really taken that to heart, where somebody might agonize for a couple of years. I'll have books written, edited, published, whether they do any good or not, I don't really care. Like, my job is just to ship it. And that dissociation from the result has been very freeing.
Oh man, detachment.
Allowing me to publish it. Yeah.
We could have a whole podcast on detachment, because detachment mm-hmm. has become a major part of my life. And it's not that I'm detached from life, but I'm detached from negative and positive things impacting the way I feel about life and the way I feel about my relationship with my family, with my friends, my relationship with the divine. I must be detached from not allowing those emotions to govern me, to mm-hmm. guide my thoughts off in a bad direction. You know, it's just a whole new direction for me. Mm-hmm. Look, we're coming to wrap up this incredible conversation. You are really a woman of wisdom, far beyond your years. As I said to you the other day, you know, you're decades ahead of where I was at your age, and what I'd like to do is throw an unusual question at you, or request mm-hmm. at you. Is there anything you would like our listeners to ponder regarding these feelings of not being good enough? You do get to think, although silence on the
radio. Yeah, I don't know that all of your listeners will have the same relationship with the divine that you and I have. So I'm trying to think if there's a way... there's a way to do this for... So if you do have a spiritual relationship with the divine, do try on this idea of, it's okay that I'm not enough. I don't have to try. I don't have to pretend. what if I just let the power flow through me? What if I trusted that I was unconditionally loved and I had infinite power and intelligence at my disposal at every second of every day? So if you are a spiritual person, do try that on and see how that resonates with you. If you're not a spiritual person, then what I would do is explore that emotional guidance system that I talked about and say, well, if that doesn't feel good, what feels better? And just allow that sensation of, I'm not enough doesn't feel good. What if it, I'm sometimes enough, right? I'm usually enough, right? It's okay that I'm always learning, right? And see if you can find a phrase or a preposition, that does shift the dial on your emotional experience of it just enough to kind of give you some breathing space.
So it's not all dependent upon you. Once it becomes all dependent on you, it just becomes such a burden. And it leads to, you know, the worst result is it leads to one wanting to take one's life. It leads to one to just feeling of utter despair and failure and not good enough, rather than if it's not God, if it's not the divine, the universe, whatever it is, something out there. There's some kind of energy out there that can supply you and fill you and guide you. And you know, just without that, it's hard to find hope, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Caitlin Kogan Domner, you are amazing.
Thanks, Charlie. You too. I love our conversation.
I do too. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And I have all your contact information. That will be on the show notes. She has several different ways of getting a hold of her. She's very available and willing to work with you and chat with you. And are you still looking for coaches? Do you have anybody that?
Absolutely. If you guys would like to experience life coaching the way that I do it, which admittedly is pretty spiritual and limiting belief focused. So a lot of the things that we talked about, do reach out to me on social media. And we can schedule a trial session for you.
Yeah, and let's define spiritual, not religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tends to resonate better with me too.
Yeah, and you're more interested in the people than conversion into a club. Okay, so I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And if you have any friends that you think this podcast may be of benefit, please turn them on to the podcast, and if they like, subscribe, and we have a weekly blog, and we have a weekly podcast, and until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.